The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everyone, this is 6 Degrees of Mike McKenna, brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network, the number one podcast network for professionals. This episode, I'm joined by former NHL goaltender Peter Budaj. Remember, if you like 6 Degrees, please rate and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, anywhere you stream the podcast. You can always find me at MikeMcKenna56 on all the social media outlets. Folks, the Super Bowl's here. It's right around the corner. You can get in on all the action at betonline.ag. Did you hear that Tampa Bay's wearing their white road uniforms at home in their home stadium for the Super Bowl? Seems goofy, but I like the play. Something a little bit creative and different. Want to wear white, keep the temperatures down in a hot climate. That makes all kinds of sense. But you know what? Native Missourian here, hard to bet against the Chiefs. That's probably my direction, even though I know there's still Tom Brady fans out there, especially in New England. Listen, I played and lived there for a long time. I get it. But I'm going to root for the Chiefs this coming Super Bowl here. Tampa Bay's first team in history to play for the title on their home field. They are a current 3.5-point underdogs against Kansas City, looking for back-to-back titles, the first time in almost two decades. BetOnline has hundreds of props on the game, including game MVP, margin of victory, and even the length of the national anthem. Is it going to be under 3 minutes? Over 2.5? Is it the Little Richard version for Mystery Alaska? We'll find out. Always available online or on your mobile device. Visit BetOnline today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Let's kick it over to Peter Budaj now. I think you're really going to enjoy this one. A lot of time in the NHL, minors from Slovakia, super interesting guy. Enjoy.
Thanks for having me, guys. You know, it's great to be here, and it's always fun to, you know, talk shop with, ex-goaltender just like you too. And, me and my family, you know, as I retired, you know, we moved to Bozeman, Montana. We lived there for a year. And then, we decided we're going to move to Arizona. You know, it's a big change, but, we really like it here too. You know, it's a great spot. You know, the youth hockey is really growing. You know, I'm trying to do some, goalie camps. You know, I enjoy coaching goalies. So this market that is growing, I think it's one of the fastest growing youth hockey place in the United States right now, I think. And, with everything going on in the world, you know, this is one of the places that still, you know, keep it open pretty solid. So it's a good opportunity for me to, you know, to try to give back to, you know, the kids and everything else, what I learned over the career, and, make them better and make them, you know, achieve their dreams if they can continue and do their best.
You know, when I started this, I said Slovakian goaltender, but you grew up in Czechoslovakia. Different world back then, right? I mean, I'm a quarter Czech. I've got ties to that. What was life like growing up for you under that regime before things changed, before it split off to the Czech Republic and Slovakia?
Well, I was, I was born in 82. So, we were still, I still remember bits and pieces. You know, I was still like 7, 8 years old when the wall went down, like Berlin Wall, and then we split in 92. But, you know, the whole regime, it's very different. You know, I think a lot of people don't understand. They've never lived there. You know, it's very hard, you know, just like for me, it would be hard to judge anybody else. They lived in a different regime that I never lived in, but I only heard about it, you know. So, you know, for me, you know, it was more, I lived through it, especially I was still a little young, but I remember a lot of it. And, it's a very different, it's a different experience, you know, definitely. And that's why I think, especially back in the day, you know, there was a lot of people that wanted to move to United States, you know, and to be fortunate enough to be part of, you know, the world and the country like United States, that is, land of opportunity, you know. And, you know, it's just, I always was my dream since I was a kid, you know. And I, even when I played back home, I always wanted to do it because, you know, one of those things was the regime and everything else. Cause, you know, it is very difficult, and it's very different than people think. And, you know, it's, you can ask anybody who lived there. It's totally, it's a little eye-opening how different it can be. People don't believe when I say the story. So,
yeah. What were the resources like? Were you able to get equipment well, ice time? Were any of those challenging for you?
They were, yeah, definitely challenging for my parents. And you know what, it's, you know, I always say that, you know, I owe everything to my parents because of that, because, you know, they had to sacrifice a lot. You know, we, you know, I don't come from a lot of money, and, you know, we in goalie position, hockey sports as it is, you know, it's very expensive, especially right now. You know, it's, you know, it's not like if you play soccer, you know, you just need a soccer ball and you're fine, but hockey, you need ice, you need a gear, you need the sticks, you know, you need to keep changing stuff. So it's very demanding financially for the parents and for the families. And, you know, especially back then when in a different regime, you know, we were, my dad had to figure out stuff. My dad had to figure out stuff like, you know, talking to older goalies that they don't have the gear they use because they grew out of it, buy it used, you know, so I can use it, and, you know, try to find resources the best they can. You know, we didn't have, you know, possibility of, you know, oh, I'm going to go to stores, I'm going to look from, you know, Bauer or Vaughn, whatever, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
you were just trying to whatever. Get equipment, not as much. This is so, my favorite kind. I just need a glove.
Yeah. Doesn't matter what color, doesn't matter what brand, doesn't matter if it is a little bit, you know, ripped up on the bottom, doesn't matter if the skate doesn't fit as well, you know, it's just, you just try to get it so you can use it and you can play the best you can. And, you know, my dad did a great job, you know, with that, and my mom too. And, you know, they sacrifice a lot of vacation times too, so I can get a pair of, you know, pads or a hockey stick and everything else. So it's definitely special for me when I talk about it, because, you know, I have a kids right now, so I know that it's a little different era right now and different position I'm in than my parents were when I was young. So, you know, I always appreciate that, what they've done to me.
That's amazing. It makes sense now, looking at your track record, that you came over early to the OHL. You know, like, you always had the ambition of getting across the pond, whether it's Canada or United States. How did you make that jump? What got you on the radar for the Ontario Hockey League to be able to get you over to Toronto St. Mike's?
Yeah, it is kind of a cool story, I think, and for me at least. You know, maybe not for people, but for me, you know, I was able to play for under 16 national team in my country, and we had like a little camp going on, and it happened to be at the same place where under 18 was playing three exhibition games versus Team Canada. And it was in Slovakia, and we were in the same town. We were not playing games. We were doing some just workout, just, you know, just like a little regular camp just to get ready for, I think that was under 18, under 16, some kind of tournament or something like that. I think both of the goalies got hurt in the first game against Canada, and the goal, and they lost the first game. And then the coach from under 18 came to our coach and says, you know what, I'm going to try one of your goalies, you know, since, you know, we got a couple guys hurt and everything else. So I went in and I played, I didn't start, you know, the other guy started, he didn't have a strong game. So he got pulled in the halfway through and I went in, and then, you know, I played well, you know, we still lost, you know, Canada was a powerhouse as it always is. So yeah, it was very difficult for us to play, but, you know, the next game I started, and I think I played well. You know, we got lit up anyways. We lost like 4-0, but, you know, 4-0.
Well, in international hockey, 4-0 is not bad. 14-0 is a real, that's really getting lit up.
Yeah,
in international hockey.
Yeah. So we lost 4-0, but they had like 50 shots. They were all over us. It was a very tough game. And after the game, there was a scout named Paul Henry, and he came to my parents. You know, we didn't speak English. My dad didn't, just barely a little bit. And, you know, he said, you know, if your son wants to, you know, try to maybe play Canadian junior hockey, you know, I have a guy that, you know, can kind of put him on the radar there, so maybe he can go to the draft and get drafted and see, because I think I don't know exactly, I think they're allowed still goalies from Europe in junior hockey.
Yeah,
I know
they had that like ban for a while because they thought they were taking the Canadian spots.
Yeah. Yeah, so back then it was allowed, you're allowed to two import players, and you can choose whatever, you got a goalie player, whatever. So I got drafted to Ontario Hockey League, to Toronto St. Michael's Majors in second round. You know, I originally, my agent, you know, when the scout gave me a number for this agent, and he was my agent my whole career, and he thought I'm going to go to Kingston, but the Kingston passed on me. They picked another guy, and then I got picked up in the second round to Toronto St. Michael's Majors. So it worked out great. And then, you know, the decision after with my parents to move as a 16-year-old, you know, I was 15 turning 16 in September, and because I was going there in August. So I my parents had to decide, you know, you want to do this? You know, it was a big decision for us. You know, I'd never been on a plane.
Wow.
never been, you know, different speaking country, you know.
Sure, it's a huge step.
No support and everything else. So we had to talk about it, you know, a lot of family meetings. And we went to see a couple of the friends that they've done similar path, that they either went to play East Coast Hockey League in the U.S. or either went to play Junior Hockey League or, you know, either Western or Quebec. And we talked to their parents and, you know, kind of make the decision that that's the right path for me. And, you know, I always wanted to do it. And, you know, I was very privileged that I was able to be drafted and get this opportunity.
Your parents must be some of the most proud people on earth, like looking at your career path and really just the chances you had to take to get to where you were. You come over and you get to St. Mike's. And first off, there's a language barrier. It's North American hockey. It's totally different culture. And you just got better and better each year, you know, played more games, your numbers improved. When did you start to realize that you were going to be on the radar for NHL teams?
You know, If I would tell you that I wasn't thinking about it, I would be lying. Obviously, that was my goal and that's what I really wanted to do. But I knew that it's really difficult. You know, sometimes I didn't even think that how hard it is. Now looking back and, you know, after, you know, my career, you kind of realize how difficult it is to achieve that and to be able to be drafted and then not just drafted, but keep going afterwards. Yeah. So, you know, when I played junior hockey, you know, I just wanted to get drafted. That was, you know, my thing that, you know, just get on the radar, get drafted. And it was difficult because I had to, you know, as a European player, language barrier, as I said, you know, I had to learn how to speak English. I always believed that, you know, if you're playing in somebody else's country, you need to learn their language. You know, I always felt like that is the least I can do. You know, I'm a foreign coming. I'm like they're not even guest. I don't even know how I put it, but that's what I really wanted to do. And school really helped me with that. You know, we were owned by private Catholic St. Michael's in Toronto.
Yeah. It's a unique setup with St. Mike's. It was probably a perfect setup for you in that way, I bet.
Yeah, it was great because I had to really dig in into my academics. You know, I had to repeat the same grade that I was in Slovakia, tutoring the language, get everything done. So I end up graduating from, you know, high school and everything else. And a lot of kids didn't want to do it. You know, a lot of Canadian kids that they put into the school, they said, oh, we don't want to go to the school. This is too hard. But I enjoyed it. Believe me, I didn't enjoy it many times, but it was something that really helped me with being part of the team, especially in dressing room. Because, you know, I think that I learned that, especially in that junior hockey and, you know, the different culture, the dressing room is very important for the team to be successful and to be able to rely on your teammate and, you know, have the good times, you know, be able to talk about stuff. And it's cool.
You had a teammate in St. Mike's that you're talking about, people who probably didn't like going to school. You had the all-time penalty minute record holder in pro hockey in North America named Daryl Bootland.
Oh,
Booter, I got to know, yeah. Booter when I played in Portland with him for one season. We sat next to each other in the locker room. He's probably the biggest personality I played with. What was he like in junior hockey?
You know what? He was a very talented player. You know, he was obviously he had a lot of penalty minutes, and I think he played in Detroit for I don't know how many seasons, but he was there for how many games. And he was the type of player that he wasn't a huge guy, but he was not afraid of anybody. It was a different era, so he was fighting a lot and everything else. But he loved the game of hockey. He loved the, you know, being around the boys in the dressing room and everything else. And he's just a fun guy to be around. But, you know, in juniors, he put up 100 points. You know, he was a scorer. You know, he was able to score. He was able to fight. And, you know, back then that was something that a lot of teams were looking for. You know, he was, I would say he was a very good power forward, you know, speaking of that, you know, he wasn't a big unit, you know, everything else, but he played hard, you know, and he never backed down from anybody. So Buddha was a very, very cool dude to be around, you know, so it was fun sitting next to him. Stuck in my head.
Yeah.
I bet it is.
It's funny because you think about this guy's got the all-time penalty minutes record. But he was a legit power forward, you know, and you think about guys like maybe Darren McCarty or someone of that mold, that Booter was supposed to eventually take that spot down the road. Yeah. And it just, people forget how good hockey players are, even the ones that are considered to be fighters by the time they get to pro hockey.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, the hockey has changed a lot, you know, in this new era and everything else. And it definitely brings more goals, more skill plays and everything else than it used to be. But as you said, you know, people don't understand, even though that you are considered a power forward or even a fighter, you still have to play the game in the same speed. Nobody's going to slow it down for you. So you have to be able to do everything else, with less time on the ice, which is really difficult. You know, you can ask anybody, you can ask the player who plays 20 minutes on the ice. I know you know that. If you play 3 minutes, 4 minutes on the ice and you sit on the bench the entire time, then you jump in into, you know, running train, you got to be ready to go. You know, it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter. You got to get that puck out. You know, you have to, you know, block the shot, you know, keep the puck in the offensive zone, make the plays, you know, back check, forward check. And it's not easy when you sit for 15, 20 minutes, you know, on the bench. So I think a lot of times these people don't get credit enough for how much they had to work and how much it has to actually take sacrifice for them to do that, you know, in a beneficial for the team. So it's those guys are very special. And, you know, I always going to have so much respect for those type of players.
You're drafted in the second round, 63rd overall, 2001 by the Colorado Avalanche. What was the first experience like, whether it was a development camp or an actual training camp? And then the first time you had Joe Sakic come down the wing and fire that patented wrister at you.
It was amazing. You know, when I got drafted, it was in Florida. You know, my parents were there with me. It was a pretty surreal day for me. And, you know, it was very emotional and everything. And then when we got to the camp, you know, I got paired up. You know, they usually put you in a three teams like they do, and two goalies each. Yeah. And they play between each other. You know, I don't know how they do it now, but my goalie partner was Patrick Roy. So he was, and I was like a young kid, and I was like, oh my gosh, I actually got him to sign my card, because I was I was sitting right next
to
him.
Hey, Pat, like, nice to meet you. Can you sign my sign my card?
I'm like, I'm so sorry. You know, I know this is embarrassing. You know, we're sitting in the same dressing room, but, you know, I remember.
How did he take it? Was he cool about it?
Oh, he was cool about it. He was so cool. He was, you know, you know, a lot of people have different opinion about Patrick and, you know, the way he is, but, you know, I have nothing bad to say about him. He was a professional. He was he wanted to win. He was a winner, and he was so nice to me as a young kid. You know, he talked to me about, like, the gear. He talked to me about the way to play the game sometimes. You know, he was super, super nice to me, and I have to say, you know, thank you for that, because he just made that transition so much easier. He didn't make that tension. You know, he's like, oh my goodness, this is Patrick. He was very cool about all the stuff, and yeah, he even signed my card. So it was kind of very, very cool about that. So I was pretty happy about that.
Was there anything that Patrick taught you about equipment that you remember today?
Not much. He just told me, you know, I used to tie my pads were super tight, and he told me to loosen up a little bit those pads. You know, it will be help you to, you know, get on the ice faster and cover the ground and not be
let
so
them rotate
tight,
you know, and turn it up.
Yes, so because, like, sometimes if you don't hit it completely perfect, sometimes you're late on the play and you have the pad really tight on your leg, you know, that pad's going to roll with your leg instead of just, you know, let the pad roll off your leg and just cover the ice like it's supposed to. So just a small thing like this. So yeah. It was really cool. And, you know, I appreciate it. I was just like, oh my goodness. I got on the phone with my parents, like, look at this. Patrick talked to me. It was so cool. So it was really cool.
Did you think you were going straight to the NHL? I mean, you spent three years in the American League marinating in Hershey, being ready for your chance, but were you disappointed when you didn't make it right away?
No. I always felt I always have this talk with my parents, and especially my dad. And, you know, you always believe that you have to pay your dues. You know, you have to wait until you're ready. You know, there's everything with its time. You know, everything with its time. You know, I think that we live in an era where everybody wants to get there as fast as possible. As everything is so fast right now, everything you want a quick satisfaction right away. If you don't get it, you don't want to wait for it, and that's it. And you can see it even with the young kids. A lot of young kids are leaving to go to Europe or go to KHL because, you know, they played one season in American Hockey League. They're like, oh yeah, I don't want to do this no more.
It's NHL or bust. I'm out of here.
And it's not bad. It's their decision. You know, I'm not judging what they want to do, but I believe that I had to get ready. You know, I know that I wasn't ready for the NHL. You know, I played the exhibition games. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. A few bad games that I remember. I wasn't ready. I knew that I wasn't ready. So I think the American Hockey League and the entire path that I was taking was really beneficial for me, because, you know, I took those years in Hershey, not just, oh, you know, I'm just here just to get back up there. You know, I'm there to learn something and to improve myself so I can be better goalie than I was yesterday and a year ago, or, you know, last training camp. So when I'm at the training camp, I'm even better. When I'm at the third training camp, I'm going to be even better than that. So I think that really helped me to have this talks with my father, my mom, about all these things, to, like, you know, wait my time, use the time wisely that I have, and be able to, you know, continue to try to grow to the goalie that I could be potentially, because, you know, they drafted me, so they saw some potential. So I tried to live up to that potential that they saw in me. So that's how I took it.
Statistically speaking, your best year in the American League of the three you played was 04-05. And that was the lockout year. And the American League was absolutely stacked. So I'm not surprised that at 5-6, Colorado put their weight behind you and brought you to the NHL full-time at that point. But what do you remember about the American Hockey League in 2004 during that lockout season?
There was a lot of great players there. You know, I think that, you know, especially with the lockout being the, you know, the full year lockout, I think that was a very strong year. And I think that a lot of good players, a lot of good young players that played already NHL got sent down and played in minor league hockey, you know, because they don't want to not play. So it was really good and really helped us. You know, we had a good team too, but, you know, there was a lot of other teams that were really, really stacked. But that really helped me, as you said, to get ready for the next step. You know, I think that American Hockey League is great, but, you know, obviously it's not an NHL. But, you know, once you send, you know, a few of the core players, even though they're young, you know, they're going to be ready to go. And, you know, they're going to be hungry. They're going to try to put up the points. So when the NHL comes back, you know, they can prove them that they can be put higher on the, you know, on their chart and everything else. So it was a really competitive year. And it was fun. You know, I think it was great.
What was your welcome to the NHL moment?
I don't even know how to say it. Like it's, I don't know. It's, you know, I was just excited when I made a team. You know, it was so, so cool. You know, I didn't expect them to play me the second game of the season. You know, I think we had a road trip to Edmonton and Dallas, and the first game David Abishai played, and then we played back-to-back nights, and nobody told me. You know, I think Joel Quenneville, and I love Joe. Joe is a great. I love playing under him. He's a great coach for us, and he didn't tell me whatever. You know, usually you tell him, you know, well, this is the game that they're gonna give you. So he didn't tell me anything. You know, just getting out of the plane, you know, early morning in Dallas, and he says, you know what, kid, you know, tomorrow, you know, good luck, you know, enjoy it. I'm like, oh, okay, that's awesome. So, you know, we end up winning, but, you know, it was just a great time, you know, and I wish my parents could have been there, but, you know, I know they were watching it. So it was really cool.
So I didn't get a chance to really dig in on it. You know, some of the players that were on the Avalanche at that time, it always revolves around Sakic, it seems like. His shot, the point totals, the leadership. When you walk in the locker room, could you feel that right away?
Absolutely. Like Joe is a great person on and off the ice, you know, and a lot of people say it's a cliche, but he was an ultimate leader. You know, he was the guy that didn't say much in the dressing room. You know, he was joking around with the boys, you know, he didn't say huge speeches and he didn't like pump up all the guys, but you just saw the way he carried himself, the leadership. You saw he is the heart and soul of the team, and, you know, that he is the future Hall of Famer at that time, and he lived up to that. You know, he was an absolute professional. Like, he would be in the dressing room early, doing all the stuff, working out, stretching, you know, skating 100% every time he stepped on the ice. Doesn't matter if it's practice, doesn't matter if it was optional. You know, when he went on, he was 100% in. You know, it wasn't just goofing around. And because of that, you know, you as a young kid, I was there, and, you know, I looked at him, you know, obviously watching all these, you know, big name players, and because he's doing what he's doing, he's kind of giving you that extra energy to push even harder than you think that you can push. You know, you always think that you work the hardest at a certain level you are at, but then, you know, when you get to the next level, you can see that, oh, there's another door. Oh, there's another step. There's always that another step that you don't realize that when you're not in that level. But I just saw that in him, and he was just a leader that, you know, was able to lead you without saying anything. You know, that's why, you know, that's the guy when you go to the battle with, that he's going to be the absolute guy who's going to take care of, you know, his part, and he's expecting the same from you, and that's what you have to do. So, and he's never going to tell you, he's not speeches that tell you how hard you have to work. It's the way he approached the game and to the entire, you know, captaincy of Colorado Avalanche, and, you know, how proud he was, you know, to be a captain, because that's why he played so hard, you know, because he loved that organization, and he just did a great job with that.
Strictly from a goalie perspective, what made it so difficult to stop his wrist shot?
I don't know. It's hard to say, but for me, I think he's one of the best wrist shots ever that I faced. I was so happy that I was on his team, not against him. But, you know, but in practice,
we've all had that player that we never want to face on the other team.
Yeah, exactly. But he just was able to take that shot in a full speed and full stride, in my opinion. That's my opinion. He never stopped skating. He never he never had that pause. You know, as a goalie, that the player sometimes pause before mm-hmm. they shoot, and then gives you the little extra half a second to get ready as a goalie.
To process it, to get on the angle.
To process it, to kind of know, and try to read the stick and try to read the release, body language and everything else. With him, he would be full stride and he would take the shot and he would beat you five hole. And you're like, oh my goodness, how did he do it? Like you were just late on it because you were not expecting him to shoot because he never take that time. He never give you that time to get set even more. You know, I think that's why he was, and you saw his highlights. I'm sure that whenever he went down, he would shoot five hole. But a butterfly era at the end of his career, he'll still beat the guys because he was able to do it full speed and never stop moving his feet. A lot of great players. I play great players that had an amazing shot, you know, in practice, but in the game they couldn't get it out because they were just didn't have the time to do that. That's why Joe was so cool, because he was able to do it full speed, player on and player off, and doesn't matter. And he would just absolutely rifle it. You know, that quick release that he had, it was amazing.
One of my favorite parts of your career is that you and I were probably the torch carriers for Bauer longer than anybody. Like if you talk about brand loyalty, I think Todd Brown at Bauer probably had both of us on speed dial for 20 years.
I had him on a speed dial. That's for sure.
What drew you to Bauer? What was your relationship like with Todd? I've had Brownie on this podcast twice and he's told some great stories. He said that you were probably the only guy that actually liked the Bauer vapor pad, but he loved working.
I loved it.
Yeah. You were the only guy, but he loved working.
I think I was the only
you.
One to wear it. I think I was the only guy to wear it when he came out. And I don't know why. It just, he was a great guy to work with. Like honestly, that vapor pad, when I first saw it, like a spec, you know, I was like, I don't know if I like it.
I had the same thought. I saw it at the factory in Mississauga. I went there from college and saw it, and I was like, I don't know about this. And
I was like, so many new quirky things that I didn't think like innovational things. You know, a lot of times when that companies happens, like it can go either great or not good. You know, it's one of those. But he made that pad into what I want. Like he understood, like, you know, I think he played goal two for a little bit. Just, you know, just so he understands certain things, which is really, really great, especially for the job that we're doing, that he talked to him. He understood what I meant. And he made that pad. I think, I don't know. He told me one time it was like a 23 different changes from a spec.
Wow.
Like it was really, really different pad. Like, but it wasn't like a different everything else. And they just slapped the, you know, colors on it that looks like it, but he actually was the same pad, but he just tweaked it a little bit to what how I liked it, and he did a great job with it. You know, Brownie's an awesome. I love Bauer since I was a kid. I always liked that company. You know, when I watch hockey back in the day, you know, they saw goalies wearing it, and I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then my first nice gear that my parents were able to afford was Bauer. And since then, I was like 12 or 13, I think. And then
I was the same.
And since then, I was like, you know what, this is it. I really enjoy this company, and you know, I'm gonna see what they got. And I always believe that the loyalty is a pretty big thing. You know, maybe a lot of people maybe disagree with me, but you know, it is what I chose, and you know, I don't have any regrets. I think the Bauer did a great job, you know, with the gear and the service that they did for us. You know, it was great.
Yeah, I had the same thoughts. I just felt like if I stayed with the company that I knew was doing a good job, that cared about me. And that I had a great connection with somebody, you know, Brownie. Yeah. I mean, I invited Brownie to my wedding, you know, like he is a legit, very good friend. And that
he's a good guy.
I had confidence in him that if I told him, listen, I need something, can you make this happen for me in my gear? I had no doubt he'd be able to pull it off. Did you have anything unique about your equipment? Like at any point in your career, specs that would kind of surprise people to hear or were just different from stock?
I don't know. I like really like my glove. I like it the old way that was closes, like the break. I was always like the old school closing. He always said like, this is like, we don't use this break anymore, but I'll do it for you because you know, I just enjoyed it more. So I think that one, at one point I tried to maybe, I think he said when I talked to Brownie, I think Curtis Joseph used to use it. I think when he had a Bowers in Toronto, while ago when he played there, and he had his blocker hand pushed a little bit higher. I had it for one season, so he had a little bit more on the bottom for the low blocker shot. So when you reach,
to get more reach with it. Hasek had it like that too.
Yeah, so I enjoyed that. You know, he actually told me about it, and you know, that was one of the things that I had used. You know, that, you know, sometimes I get exposed when I turn my wrist too far on high shots. You know, I got exposed there, but you know, the chest protector was fine too. So I use that a lot because I felt like that low blocker shot is something that is, not many guys shoot there right now. Everybody likes, bar down, but
yeah, you got to make it look good.
But yeah, but it's the same, man. It's not 2 points. It's only one goal. It doesn't count as two goals. I always tell my son when we play, even the shot that just goes over your butt or something like that, it still counts as a goal. Nobody asks how, just give it to net. So yeah, that's one of the things then, like the gloves and then the pads. I like a soft pad. Like I enjoyed my soft pad. Like, I know that you like a little bit stiffer.
Yeah. But you're pretty old school in what you like. I like regular strapping.
I tried that, a while, but I just felt like I never get the response. Like I felt like it was more consistent response from my pad with the strapping that is old school, because of the leather didn't give in as much as the,
yeah,
the
it doesn't elastic, move. You know what you're getting it doesn't with move. It.
You know what I'm getting with it. So I kind of enjoyed it more. It felt more comfortable, but the new pads are just amazing now. They're so light and, kids can do crazy things with it. And they're
compared to what we started with. Think about what we started with, I mean,
deer fur and stuck into it. So and then it was on the ice. It was like 30 pounds each pad. So it was funny.
And how bad the puck hurt, like our arm and chest protectors. Yeah. I mean, I'm an 83, you're an 82. We went through the same things in the 80s and the early 90s where there was no chest protectors,
bruises everywhere. Yeah. It was, everything was a bruise. So,
and on top of our knees. Oh
yeah. Even the glove, like you didn't catch it in the pocket. Like it was just kidding. Just demolished.
I remember when I tried out for my junior team, it was my hands were black and blue and the tops of my knees were the same way. Cause we still had short pads and 1999, I was using 34 inch pads. My knees were exposed. They didn't even have good knee guards. The game's so safe now. Like when you coach kids nowadays, do you find that it's so different for them because they don't fear the puck like we used to?
Yeah, sometimes I do, sometimes I do, but I feel that the gear is so good right now that they can, they don't even have to do the movement right, but almost the gear kind of helps them to get to the right position. Like we had to, remember when we started, you had to hit the butterfly at the right, like a sweet spot. If you didn't, the pad would roll, it wouldn't cover the ice properly. There would be holes and everything else. But the pads, they're so well right now. They just go to kind of like the position of the pad takes them there. Like, the technology that went into goalie gear and, it's amazing, because it's completely different what it used to be. So it's a big step for hockey and especially for the goalie. So.
Oh man, we could talk goaltending gear all day long. Hey, listen, if you're a goaltender looking to improve your game, I'm available for coaching through 44visionhockey.com. You go on, you create an account and you put my name in as your coach. I'll take all your video from Live Barn, from Hockey TV, we upload those, take all the clips, and then we go through it all in a Zoom meeting. You get a couple of clips that you get to refer back to that'll be on your player page at all times. I take what I know of the position, what I've learned from all the goalie coaches that I've worked with, put it into your game through a pro's eye. So go to 44visionhockey.com. Again, put me in as your coach. I'd love to work with you. Back to your career. Let's talk Olympics. What a moment, huh? Like that's one thing I never got to do was put my country's jersey on. I can't imagine how cool that must have been for you.
Yeah, definitely. It is one of the coolest things that, I was able to do. And I was very privileged to be able to do that. But, it's just very special. I think that, standing on a blue line national anthem for NHL, even as a Canadian or American, I know they're not my national anthems, but it's still a very, very special moment. And it's just, getting ready. But if you hear your own national anthem, it is very special, especially knowing, the sacrifices the people made that helped me to get where I was. And, that was very special whenever I was able to play for Team Slovakia. So it was pretty cool. It's something very special.
That's amazing. That's the one thing, man. I just wish I'd had that chance. The other thing was outdoor game. I never got one of those. I can't think.
No,
did you ever get a chance?
Of those either. Nope. Never got one of the outdoor games either. No, I think it would be cool, but depends how cold is outside and how is the ice quality. Cause I heard the guys say that's the greatest moment ever, but the game is actually really tough. If you have the sun, going to your eyes or something, like sometimes the ice is not good. I think fear. I don't know where it was. I don't know. No,
but more than you played with Jose Theodore, who played in the coldest one ever.
Oh, he told me it was an absolute disaster. He said he couldn't feel his fingers or toes. He said it was so cold. that he was praying to catch the puck in the pocket, because if they would have got hit like in the wrong spot, it's just absolute. And that puck is just like rock hard at that time. It's just
That's like the beginning of practice. It's that first 10 minutes of practice that no matter what you do, you can't get your hands warm enough and every single shot hurts. You know, you're just begging your teammates, please don't shoot at my hands for the first 10 minutes.
I was always like, after the day off, when you have like a crispy gear and you put it on, the first 10 minutes is just until you get a little sweaty and get a little loosened up, but it's first 10 minutes always tough. Everything feels like, it's like this protector doesn't even protect me anymore. What's going on here?
You had some famous masks in your career, and a lot of them revolved around Ned Flanders. What point did that nickname stick for you?
Well, it's funny because I never even watched Simpsons, so I'm going to make some people upset, but I never did. It's just when I was my first year, Terry Gear was one of our assistant equipment managers. And he just called me Ned, you know, because he said, you know, you're always smiling and laughing and you're always happy, you know, you're happy to be there. So he just called me Ned. Just him, though, nobody else. Like, it didn't stick around, like nobody ever called me that, but he did. And, you know, I'm trying to pick something when I'm going to put on my mask, and he said, why don't you put Ned? I'm like, oh, that's just stupid. I don't think it's going to be cool. It's just ridiculous. Like the little yellowish glasses character, like it's not cool. But he's like, just put a small one and see how it goes. And, you know, I did a small one on my back right here. And David Gunnarsson said, like, he really liked the idea. He said that a lot of people liked it and enjoyed it. So he just kept putting on the mask and everything else.
That's cool. I like the mask that you had with Valentino Rossi on it.
The doctor is awesome. Yeah, the doctor was pretty cool. I think that I had Lionel Messi and I had Valentino Rossi. It's just I enjoyed watching the MotoGP, and you know, I think that he was an amazing rider.
Unreal.
And so I put him on there. You know, I don't think many people knew who he was, because I don't think it's huge in States, but you know, me being from Europe, I watched it all the time. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah. MotoGP is definitely a Euro thing more than a US thing. But if you're into racing and motorsports, like I grew up in motorsports, my dad raced open wheel cars, kind of Formula One or IndyCar. And so you're aware of everything. Was it just MotoGP that you enjoyed? Were there other motorsports?
No,
that you liked?
Honestly, like my parents, you know, raised me to like every sport, but you know, we watched every kind of, you know, motorsport too. You know, we watched, a little bit NASCAR, but we didn't have, you know, back when I was a kid, we didn't have the capability of watching, you know, NASCAR and USA channels and everything else. You know, we didn't have those, but we had a Formula One, you know, so I watched a lot of Formula One, a lot of MotoGP, and, you know, a lot of other sports, like obviously soccer and, you know, tennis and all these things, you know, so I enjoy those sports a lot. You know, I enjoyed it. You know, we every Sunday when there was a, you know, Grand Prix, you know, we went to church and went for lunch and we come home, sit on the couch and watch some, you know, Formula One. You know, it was funny. My mom was able to do it too, so which was surprising, but she did it. And, you know, and me and my brother and my dad, we watched it all the time. So it was kind of cool.
Your time with the Avalanche was like, you had great years, but the team was up and down a lot, right? It wasn't great all the time. It's tough to be in a scenario where you don't feel like you're being rewarded with good play on a team that's just not bringing it all the time, you know? So like for all the years that you had there and the time you spent, what were the highlights of being an Avalanche player?
You know, I think for me, obviously it was obviously making it to the NHL was one of the big ones. You know, I think that was this huge first shout out, you know, that was really big too. But, you know, just being part of the team, you know, we went to the conference finals, then we got swept by Anaheim won that year, and you know, it was just a great to be part of, you know, playoffs. You know, I think the playoffs is really, really, really great, and I think that was really rewarding for me, that, you know, we didn't make playoffs a couple of years, but we usually, my first, you know, few years, you know, we, as you said, you know, we're up and down. You know, we made a playoffs when we made a playoffs into the second round and we lost and we didn't make it the next year. So it was kind of up and down, but you know, just to be able to get to playoffs and realize how much different that is than regular season, you know, it is pretty spectacular. You know, all the players are finding that extra gear to be able to play and to be able to, you know, sacrifice their body and everything else for achieving the ultimate goal to winning a Stanley Cup. So I think that was really, really spectacular for me.
There's really nothing like playoffs, is there? Like the overall feeling of it and the intensity and that vibe in the room and on the ice.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to. You don't have to say anything, or you know, you just know that it's the next level. You know, I think that, I don't know. I'm sure it's in the other sports too, but I don't know. But for hockey, it's just the atmosphere in dressing room, and the kind of like feeling when you walk in, getting ready for the game. It's completely different. Yeah. You know, it's the next, as I said, next gear that people are able to find and push through to, you know, to get to the ultimate goal. You know, because that's why you're there, you know, that's, you know, ultimately we're all playing to win. Yep. You know, nobody, you know, you can score 100, 200 points, but if you don't win Stanley Cups, you know, that's the ultimately what, it's not a successful season for the team.
I always say this, that you can have a lot of fun without winning, but you can't have the most fun if you don't win. It's a part of it, you know, especially when you're getting paid to do it. It matters. And no matter how much people can say that all that matters is that you try hard and have fun, winning goes hand in hand with that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think with the, when you're young, you got to kind of like build, kind of like a find that love towards the game, that they can, that passion for the game later when the things are, you know, more stressful and the things are more serious, because it's not just, you know, tournament, you know, on Friday night or something like that. It's actually, you know, it's your job. First of all, you know, you at the end of the day are just a name tag that people put together name tags and hoping that they're going to win the game and win the, you know, Stanley Cup. So you gotta be able to find it in you. And sometimes, you know, you have whatever is going on, you have to find that, that passion that you build in over the years of playing game and enjoy the grind and everything else, because ultimately that's what you want to do. As you said, you know, at the end of the day, it's a, winning is everything. You know, winning is why you play the sport, and why when you get to the, you know, professional sport, especially, you know, I think that you are, you're judged by wins. You know, nobody is going to judge you. You know, obviously you have to try hard to do that, and you learned it over the years, but you know, at the end of the day, if you don't win, the change is going to happen. That's ultimately the sport. It's a business, you know, at the end of the day, for the people upstairs and for the owners and everything else, you know, they give players great lives and everything else, but they expect to win. You know, that's what it is.
After a decade in the same organization, you get traded to Montreal, you end up going there. I can't remember if you were traded or signed, but
no, I was a free agent.
Free agent. So you signed with Montreal. I mean, after spending that long in one organization, were you excited for a change, just for a new adventure, for a new challenge?
Yeah, excited. But, you know, obviously it's hard to, you know, leave the team. You know, you build a community and build friends, and, you know, you feel like you're part of a team. But, you know, as I said before, you know, I knew that changes happens and there's nothing you can do. And, you know, you try to look at it from a point of view that some stuff that you can't control, and that's how it is. And, you know, I was excited to go to Montreal. You know, it's you know, most wins ever for a team, and it's like New York Yankees for baseball. It's the, you know, amazing spot. You know, people live and breathe hockey. You know, it's just it was pretty cool that I was able to play there. You know, and in front of Montreal fans. You know, we always say, like, if you cannot get up for the Montreal game, doesn't matter if you play for Montreal or against Montreal, but if you're in Montreal and there's no something goosebumps going down your back when you're hearing it, you know, that means you don't like hockey.
Was it hard to handle the pressure there?
It was very difficult, I think, sometimes, you know, because you are, people live there, you know, it's like a religion for them. You know, they live and breathe there. There's like, I think, 5 TV shows, like a pre-game TV show. There's 4 post-game TV shows. There's grading in the newspaper for the players every game and all this stuff. It can be very, especially for the young players, like 19, 20-year-old kids, it can be very either helpful or, you know, not very helpful, because, you know, it's, you have a good game, media is going to say, oh, this guy's got to be an all-star, you know, he's the best. The next game, you don't have a good game, and they just say, oh, they got to send him to minors and everything else. So it can be very challenging for the especially young players, because they expect nothing but greatness. You know, I think that, you know, not just the organization, but I think the culture of the city and Montreal as it is, you know, they expect wins because they've been used to it for so many years. So they all expect that, you know, that's the year that we're going to win and nothing bad. You know, you lose 2 games in a row and, you know, their alarm is, you know, everywhere else, you know, what's going on with the team and what kind of changes we should make. So I think if you stay away from, you know, newspapers and news, you know, I think it can maybe help the kids, because that can be kind of detrimental for them a little bit.
Probably helped that you were already established in your career before you went there and knew how to handle things better. I can't imagine being a young gold. I mean, you were teammates with Carey Price. The scrutiny he faced and what he's had to go through to remain a top goaltender in the league. You saw it from an inside perspective. It must not have been easy on him at the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely not. You know, and I think, you know, when you get to the league and you're like 19, 20, and as he was, I think he was only like 18 or 19 or something like that. It's very difficult. Your mind is a little bit different than when you're 30. I think that is completely different. So, you know, you're still growing. You're still not, you know, a veteran. You're still trying to figure out the ins and outs of the game and everything else, you know, especially of the professional life and everything else. But, you know, Carey did a great job with that. You know, I think he had obviously, like every young kid, has some hiccups, you know, that stuff like that. And, you know, it's difficult, but I think that, you know, he was able to find a way to handle that pressure. And it's not easy, you know, it takes a very special person to be able to do that, you know, because it's very challenging. It's very difficult to come back every day when you know that a lot of all eyes are on you pretty much every single time that Montreal played, and I think the city just stopped and everybody was just watching TV. So it was bored of hockey games. So it was very, very difficult, but he's able to handle it. He's a strong mentally, he's a strong goalie, and he's been proving it for years and years. You know, he's been one of the top goalies in the game for years, you know, so it's pretty credit to him for that.
You know, my favorite part of your career, it's not the 367 games you played, the 158 wins. It's how you resurrected your career and how you faced adversity and bounced back from it. When you got shuffled out of Montreal, you end up on the Rock in St. John's. And Boots, I've never seen a season like you had. 0-9-6. Horrible. You didn't win a single game and you were on the Rock.
The worst thing in the world,
And I want to know where you were mentally that season. If it just spiraled, were you happy? Could you find joy in what you were doing? And then the second part to that, how the hell did you come back and put up the season you did the next year with Ontario? We were at the All-Star game together that year, and it was the old boys club. It was me, you, Jan Dunne, Michael Layton, but you were unbeatable, man. Like I couldn't I can't wrap my head around this.
It was, like that. That was the worst season I've ever heard of.
You didn't, you didn't win. You know, it was like you didn't win, man.
Yeah. Like, you didn't win one game. Yeah. It was horrible. It was a bad time for my life. And it was just bad place I was at, and everything that was going back went bad. And you know, I think that my mindset as a hockey, you know, I didn't take it as I did those years in Hershey where we talked about, and I'd taken it to, you know, to improve my game. And I just took it just like you said that I should, not that I should, but that a lot of young kids do. And I'm just like disappointed that I was down and I wasn't focusing on the games. And, you know, I was focusing on what everybody else doing, except what I'm doing. And it was just something that I don't anybody wish to go through. And it was just horrible. And you know, made some bad choices and didn't play well and was terrible. You know, so it was really, really, really horrible for me. But you know, the next year, you know, after that year, I didn't have a contract. Then I came and I was trying to look for the team, you know, and nobody called. And then I called, they said no.
And, less than a year removed from playing the NHL for a decade.
Yeah. And you know, it just shows you, you know, you're only as good as what you've done for me lately. You know, it's nothing like knowing and sitting at home and not getting anything. You know, I think that it was very difficult for me, you know. I was telling my wife, you know, this could be it. You know, I have nothing. You know, I don't even know. Not even some teams in Europe didn't want to even talk to me. You know, and I didn't want to go to Europe first of all, but I didn't have anything. So, and then I talked to my agent and he said, listen, you know, let's go try the LA for a tryout and see where it takes you. And then we'll see what's going to happen after. And I look at the LA and I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, it's Jonathan Quick, number one, first of all. I didn't even think about NHL. I didn't even think about that. And then the minor team that was Manchester at the time, they won the Calder Cup. So they're just coming back from the Calder Cup. They have two young goalies, Berube and Bartosz, and they're both pretty good. And I'm like, I even told my agent, I'm like, this is probably not the right spot. He's like, you know what, just give it a try. Go out there and just play, see what's going to happen. I'm like, okay. So I went to the camp And my mindset was completely different. I really went there that this is probably my last time that I'm going to be playing in North America.
This could be it. Literally, you're looking at the cliff at this point thinking this is it.
No contract, nothing. And I, I just went out there and play. I didn't focus on anything else. And I was just focusing on playing the game. You know, I had a goalie coach, Dusty Emu, and he was with me in St. John's. And he knew me, you know, we worked together and he's a great guy. He really helped me because, you know, in St. John's I had zero wins. So, and then he got signed in Ontario and I went to Ontario to the LA Kings camp and, you know, do that. And I was like, that's going to be interesting. So it was good to see, you know, familiar face and, you know, he knew me. And Dusty's a great guy to understand the personality of the goalie. I think especially when you go and you're coaching like the young kids and when you coach the professional guys, it's very different to be coaching them. You know, when you coach professional guys, adult guys, you have to understand the person. You have to understand how to talk to him, when to talk to him. Sometimes you have to let him go. Sometimes you have to talk to him and, you know,
because
bring the heat.
They're successful for a reason, but you have to learn how to get through to that person.
Exactly. That's what makes a very good goalie coach, especially in like NHL and stuff. They have to be also mentally understanding the goaltender, mental state. They have to understand the personality of the goaltender because it's very, very, very different than coaching a 13 or 14 year old kid. It's completely different. But so long story short, I just played and played well. And then I went to the minors. That didn't make the team. They said, you know what, we're going to send you down. I'm like, and see, we don't have a contract. So I was still on a PTO. I was able to sign PTO. So I'm like, oh, yeah, that's great. But the only reason why I signed PTO is because their Berube guy got picked up on waivers.
He went to the Islanders.
Yes. And then they didn't have a goalie because they were really, they didn't have a good depth and they didn't have goalies. So I'm like, okay, so I'm going to be PTO. I'm going to be backing up Bartosak until they decide what's going to happen.
Then Bartosak went away.
Yeah, he went away. Whatever happened there. So first what happened, he got hurt. He dislocated his thumb and hurt in practice. And he had a surgery. He was out for a month. So they said, okay, you know what? We signed you for the PTO thing and you're going to play for us. And I start playing. And Ray Emery was there with me.
That's
Ray
right.
Emery
they had there, both so of you guys on PTOs.
Me and Razor were both on PTOs as a goalies and minors. And then Bartosak never came back, you know. And I just started winning games. Like, you know, I felt like it was funny looking back at it. Like I went to the first game, you know, we played and that was really, really mentally, like I was stressed out about that game because it was the first game that we played of the season, a team that just won a Calder Cup. I'm on a PTO. There's not a very good goalie sitting right there, you know, Ray Emery, you know, he's got an amazing career too. And he was right there and they made me start it. And I literally coming off haven't won a game in probably, I don't even know how many days. Like it's like 300, over 300 days. I haven't
over a calendar year for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I won some exhibition games, but that doesn't count. Like I'm talking about like real games, so it was very difficult. But you know, we had a really, really strong team, and Mike Stoddard was a great coach, and we had a strong team, so that really helped me. That you know, we scored a couple goals early, and then you know, I got settled in a little bit, and we ended up winning. And since then, you know, it was just an amazing season. You know, it was just, you know, everybody says like, hey, did you have some secrets that, you know, but it was just, you know, Dusty really helped me as my goalie coach. You know, I felt really good there as an organization. The head coach was really great. You know, the assistant coach, Hyder, was great too. You know, it was, you know, Stutzy made me feel, I love Stutzy. Like Mike Stutters was old school coach and his old school coach. And I loved the way that he was coached. He told me exactly how it was. He wasn't putting, you know, napkins in front of his mouth when he talked to me. He talked to me like a man to man. And I really appreciated it. You know, I think that, you know, when I had a crappy game, he told me, you know what, Boots, you know, I didn't like your game 2 days ago when we lost. You know, just the way it is. You know, I don't think you were strong. You just got to get better on these things, you know, because I think we can go far with this team. That's what he told me straight up. You know, and I'm a 33-year-old guy. Like, you know, I enjoyed it. I appreciated it or anything like that. You know what you're getting. And I appreciated it because that was great. So that helped me a lot.
You know what I think your secret sauce was? You're having fun.
Yeah, probably.
You didn't have any pressure. And the moment you won that first game, it was like that, all that built up pressure is like the dam broke and you could just go play and have fun again and be yourself.
Yeah, that game when
I saw you at the All-Star game, you had the biggest smile on your face I've ever seen playing.
Yeah, I was just having fun. Yeah, I was just excited. You know, it was just a surreal moment for me, because especially when I said, when I was, you know, 5-4 months ago, and then I was there night and day. You know, went from, you know, probably quitting hockey to be able to play and be at the AHL All-Star was just great. You know,
and then look what happened amazing. The next
very
season.
Very thankful for that.
You end up playing 53 games with the Kings. And again, you get a couple more years out of your career and you're a starter in the NHL again. Going from what you had been through to that point, did it almost seem surreal?
Absolutely. It almost I know nothing is impossible. I mean, people say that, but it was literally impossible. I never even imagined that in my mind. Like if somebody would ask me that, I would like, you guys are crazy. That is never going to happen. And, you know, after that year, I came back to camp with, you know, with the Kings, and, you know, I was thinking that I might be a backup, you know, to Quickie. And they picked up Jeff Zatkoff, and he was playing. And you know, I had a really strong camp, and, you know, Dean Lombardi called me in his office and said, you know what, we're going to send you down. Before that, they told me, you know, like, if you all play him, you know, that's good. And I had a really, really strong camp. I don't think I lost a game, and my stats were great, you know, so I did everything, you know, my testing was good. Everything was good. So I was like, and I asked him, you know, like, you know, just between me and you, what should I work on, since, you know, you guys obviously think that I'm lacking something. And they're like, no, it's just, you know, just keep going. This is the situation, you know? And he told me, he's like, look, he's like, a year ago, you were a boxer who was on a count of 9 down on the ground. Right now you're playing professional hockey. You might play NHL. You had a great year in AHL. Go back down, see what's going to happen. You never know. I'm like, okay. So I'm driving back. We have a team function with Ontario. And literally that night, you know, Quickie, unfortunately for him, he got hurt. And they called. And I was like, this is like unbelievable. And then I changed. Zatkoff started a couple games, and then they put me in, and I never looked back. It was just, you know, something that I wouldn't even think about it. I don't think ever, and nobody would. Well, I think that would everybody ask himself.
Did you ever get emotional thinking about it? I've had moments in my career where I've looked back on it and I just think, I honestly can't believe that this happened to me, that I got the chance to do this, that I quite literally live my dreams.
It is. Yeah, it is absolutely. It is a privilege that, you know, and blessing, you know, I think that, you know, I'm Christian, so I always say, you know, that was the way God wanted me to go. Like it literally everything fall in the right path for me, even though I didn't make the team. They didn't want me. They had to play me. They had to put
me in.
They
had no choice. Like, you're playing
that
well.
They had no choice. So it's like, it was literally, you know, a very special moment for me. So I'm very thankful for that, because I was able to get a couple more years out of it. So it was cool.
Another cool moment of your career was finishing it off. And we kind of had similar paths in that way too, that I think you had an idea when your last game was going to be. I knew when mine was too, but your teammates did something really special for you in Ontario.
It was cool. Like I didn't tell anybody, like I wasn't going to tell anyone, you know, we talked about with my wife that it's going to be it. And then, you know, I think that I just told just somebody, I just said, you know what, this could be my last, but, you know, I just said, you know, don't say it to boys or anything like that. I think it was one of the person from the staff, or I think one of the PR guys. And I said, like, you know, I don't want to tell the boys or anything like that. And then last game, they really did something very special. I didn't know about it. Nobody told me about it. So they did the whole video and everything else. It was very, very emotional for me, you know, to have my wife and the kids on the ice. You know, it was very special. You know, they make pictures and send me like the little, you know, picture frames and everything else. So it's, you know, I still have it. So it's amazing. So it was a very cool thing that Ontario did for me, and the LA organization too. You know, it's very, very special for me, and that the day is going to be always remembered. So it was cool.
Isn't it nice to be able to end a career the way you want to end it? That really means a lot to an athlete to be able to call your own shot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, we live in a world, but a lot of times we don't have a chance to call our own shot. And, you know, because of the business point of view, but, you know, being able to say it and be able to finish it like you wanted to, it's pretty, pretty special. And I think that anybody who was fortunate enough, just like me and you, that, you know, we appreciate it more than people understand, you know, because you don't understand how much you, you know, love the game. And that was your life. You know, it's a huge part. It's the pretty much 90% of your life until that point. You play since you're 5 or 6, and you know, you played until you're 35, and you know, that's pretty much entire your life you spend around hockey and in hockey world. So yeah, it is very special. And you know, share it with the people that you love, like, you know, like your, I don't know, I had my family there, my kids, so it was very special. And you know, my parents are watching it too, so it was pretty cool.
Now that we're just a couple of retired old goaltenders, what's next? What's next for you? You're living in the Phoenix area. What's keeping you busy?
You know, I'm doing some private lessons with the goalies, and I'm trying to get into coaching the goalies, not players, just the goalies. And I enjoy it. You know, I think that I'm looking to stuff to give back, and I enjoy working with the goalies, seeing what they're doing, and trying to help them, you know, with the experience that I, you know, got from the years of playing, you know, that I can help their game. And then seeing them playing well makes me very satisfied, because it's like, you are, I remember when I was a kid, and if I would have a goalie coach, I mean, I had goalie coaches, but I never had a goalie coach who played NHL and, you know, played a long career. So it's very special for me to give back to the kids. And I see a lot of kids there are trying, and a lot of kids have a lot of passion for the game. And that's what I love to see on the kids, too, the determination and the passion, the struggles too, because there are going to be struggles, you know, there's going to be a tough situation they're going to face, but it's just amazing that I want to be a part of it, and I want to help them the best I can. So, you know, I'm doing some goalie camps and goalie clinics, goalie private. So that's the route I want to go. And hopefully it's going to work out.
You got a good heart, Boots. Thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. You know, it's awesome.
Big thanks to Peter Budai for hopping on the show. If you enjoy 6 Degrees, please subscribe and rate in iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you're interested in advertising on 6 Degrees, please contact Believe at BLEAV.com. As always, you can find me on all the socials at Mike McKenna 56. Thanks for listening to 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.